Today is a beautiful day, but even so, winter can be hard to love. The days are short, the sky is often gray, and the air is cold enough to hurt your skin. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For a lot of people who struggle with winter, the problems go beyond dislike. This hour, we'll talk about the psychological effects of the season and how to combat seasonal affective disorder. And many people believe that the only way to truly enjoy winter is to get out into it. Mindy Kralichek of Iowa Outdoors will be here to talk about some fun, innovative, and surprising ways to embrace winter in Iowa. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Winter is hard for a lot of people, and the struggle can go well beyond dislike or discomfort. Today, we'll start the hour with a conversation about the psychological effects of the season. And later, Mindy Kralichek of Iowa Outdoors will be here to talk about some fun, innovative, and surprising ways to embrace and enjoy winter in Iowa. We also want to hear from you this hour. What's your favorite way to get outside in the winter? Where are your favorite Iowa winter destinations? Are you a reformed winter hater? We'd love to hear your story. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now is Nancy Bloom. She's a social work specialist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And a lot of us talk about having seasonal affective disorder or experiencing some kind of depression in the winter. From the clinical diagnosis, what is seasonal affective disorder?
What it is the experience of a number of symptoms that appear to start for most people when the day length shortens, and they often notice that they suddenly want to eat more, particularly high carb, lots of sweets. They have less energy. They're wanting to sleep more, but not necessarily feeling rested. Harder to concentrate, and in contrast to what we think of as regular depression, the change to a low mood or a depressed state seems to actually come later. They notice those other kinds of physical symptoms first.
All right, so we may feel sleepy and want a lot of comfort food, which tends to go along with the holidays as well, but sometimes the real punch of this hits us in January or February when it's dark and it's gray and it's cold.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of us experience these kind of winter blues, and we think about it as normal, and maybe it just is normal. But at what point do we have enough warning signs that we think, oh, this could be a real problem?
I think that's just an excellent question. And I think that when those symptoms are more than just an annoyance, or they are really causing serious impairment in the ability to work or do household chores, take care of a family, and certainly if someone is feeling so depressed that they're actually thinking about hurting themselves or even taking their own lives, that certainly they should be seeing a mental health professional.
Is this a problem that tends to be more difficult for people who already struggle with depression?
It's not necessarily more common. It does tend to be more common in women, and of course more women than men suffer from depression. But it seems to affect about 6% of the population. And again, about half of those are women. So what really sets it apart as a disorder on its own is the fact that it occurs regularly without necessarily having episodes of depression at other times of the year.
So if we are recognizing these symptoms in ourselves or in a family member, we may see someone struggling with it. They may not have noticed that they are going through this kind of cycle. And you, in preparing for this interview, you mentioned that it's not just depression, but it can be irritability is
exactly.
a big sign. So once we see these signs, what can we do?
There's a number of things that, again, and I think we really need to separate this into the group of people where the symptoms are extremely impairing. As I said, about 6% of the population. Another 14% probably fall into that category of winter blues or January blahs, as someone told me the other day they were experiencing. And it may even be a higher number that have even milder symptoms, but they'd like to see if there's a way to feel better at this time of year. And you've already mentioned that your next guest is going to be talking about ways to exercise, ways to be outside more, get more exposure to daylight and particularly sunlight. We also know that exercise, whether it's indoors or outdoors, is extremely helpful, as would be emphasizing a diet that has high protein and complex carbs like fruits and vegetables. So all of those things together that we think of as a healthy lifestyle can be extremely helpful. And for a lot of people, that may be all they need. However, some people who don't have the opportunity to get outdoors or be in a bright environment may find it very helpful to try one of the phototherapy lights.
When you talk about getting outdoors and getting natural light, when I go outside, recently I've been wearing my long winter coat, I've been wearing my headband, I've had my hood up, so I'm not really getting a lot of sun striking my face or striking my bare skin, and my face is the only part that's bare. How long do you need to be outside to feel some beneficial effects?
Well, again, the most effective therapy and the phototherapy lights are exposure of your eyes, actually, to the bright light. Now, again, we have the other side of it where you may be outside and you will need to use sunglasses if there's a lot of glare, and certainly you don't want to be looking directly at the sun. However, at this time of year, being outside in bright daylight for 30 minutes a day, preferably coupled with exercise, and that can just simply be walking from place to place on your errands, is very, very helpful.
If we go through a period where we don't see the sun, that is the hardest for me. And we've had a pretty gray winter this winter. And today we have a beautiful sunny day, but we haven't had a lot of those. Does natural light still help even if there's no sun?
It helps, but it again, when it's extremely cloudy and gray, for those who really notice prominent symptoms, that light, while it's never harmful, is also not likely to be as helpful. And therefore, being able to boost that exposure with one of the phototherapy lights can definitely be the thing that tips the balance. The other thing we have to remember, it can be bright and sunny outside. However, it can also be icy. There may be people with limited mobility who simply can't get outside. And again, we don't have the consistency or the predictability of those sunny days. So those who are really noticing these symptoms may want to look into the possibility of using a phototherapy light.
With phototherapy lights, there are a lot of them on the market, and the price seems to be coming down, which is good. But there are also some very inexpensive lights that claim to be phototherapy lights. If you want to buy one, what kind of research do you need to do to make sure you're getting something that might actually benefit you?
I think that's probably the place where you want to talk with a mental health professional to get some information. And there are a variety that range in price. I don't know that we have any evidence that the more you pay, the more beneficial it is. So, again, it's somewhat of a trial and error. And most professionals who counsel people about this problem also will point them toward a variety of resources. Some of it depends on your budget. Some of it depends on how much room you have for a certain size. It's also becoming more common now that insurance companies will cover the cost or part of the cost if someone has received a diagnosis.
Okay, so maybe a prescription light.
Exactly.
Now, we talked about earlier how the days start getting shorter in the fall, but the brunt of this tends to hit us in January or February. If you have a history of these winter blues, is light therapy something that you should start thinking about in October or November?
I think for many people, they find that helpful to be proactive and to start when they notice the day length shortening, they're indoors more. And so even though the full brunt may not hit until this time of year, you may be able to actually avoid going through this because, again, it can take a week or two to really start noticing the effects of the phototherapy.
All right, that was going to be my next question. So in a week or two, you can start to feel benefits. How long do people need to spend with these lights to start to feel benefit? Not in the week sense, but how many hours a day?
Oh, it's actually minutes a day, which, again, is good news. Some of the newer lights recommend starting with 15 minutes. If that, you know, try that for 3, 4, 5 days. If you're not starting to notice some improvement in those early symptoms that I mentioned, then you may want to go to 30 minutes. But for most people, somewhere around 15 to 30 minutes with the newer LED lights. Now, the older fluorescent type lights often required up to an hour a day, but with the newer ones, you can just have them next to you while you're eating breakfast, which, by the way, you're not staring at those lights. You are keeping it to the side about 13 to 18 inches from your face. And as you're reading the newspaper, you just quickly glance over every so many seconds or so. Just glance at it, back to the newspaper. Now, don't hold the newspaper up so that it's completely covering your face, right, obviously. Or if you're working on the computer, putting on makeup, all
just
of those can
it,
be
have it near your
exactly.
face, not directly on your face. Nancy, thank you so much for your advice today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Nancy Bloom is a social work specialist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Coming up in just a minute, we'll talk about different ways to get out and embrace winter. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been talking about how difficult winter can be for a lot of people, and some of the best advice that you can hear is the best way to enjoy winter is to get outdoors and really have fun in it. That's can be difficult for some of us to do, but Mindy Kralichek has a lot of great ideas for how to do that. She is a writer for Iowa Outdoors, and she recently wrote the article Stoked on Snow, Get Out There. Hello, Mindy.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I know this is an article you actually wrote during the summertime in Iowa. That must have been quite a disconnect for you to try to focus on winter while it was nice and warm outside.
It was. But it was also disturbing to come out of writing it because I would be, you know, thinking back about different experiences and activities and, you know, having the snow in my face and so forth. And then all of a sudden it'd be time to close down my computer and go outside. And here it is, you know, 90 degrees out and humid. And yeah, it was like, ooh, adjustment.
So when you set out to find a bunch of winter activities to write about for Iowa Outdoors, I think that a lot of us who, in media who try to do shows like this or articles like this, it's difficult to get out of some of the ruts. Yes, you can go out and you can watch eagles. You know, we have some of the same ideas every year. Did you try to come up with some different ideas?
Well, sure. First of all, I was trying to think about what's fun. You mentioned that right at the beginning in the introduction. It's got to be fun to get people to go outside. When I think back of the most fun I've had, it's when I've gone outside with my children and, you know, I don't push them out the door, go out with them, or my grandchildren, and, you know, bring that sled and a thermos of hot chocolate and get outside with them. And if there's hills in your neighborhood, you know, great. But there's plenty of places in parks and in city parks, county parks, state parks that have hills that allow people to go sledding or even cross-country skiing on the trails that they have. Get out there, encourage your children. I mean, if you do it for them, maybe that'll help you motivate you to get out there when it seems like it's just a little too cold. Because it only takes one fall in the snow or being tipped over on the sled and you realize how much fun this is,
right.
You know. You
right.
start laughing and then it's okay, you know. Then the second time down the hill isn't a problem.
once you get moving, I think for a lot of us it's the dread of going out there. If you can get over that dread, then you can have a pretty good time once you actually get out there. We also want to hear from you this hour. If you are a winter lover, what are some of your favorite things to do outdoors in the winter? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you are a reformed winter hater, how did you get over it? What did you do to embrace the season? 866-780-9100. You can also tell us where some of your favorite winter destinations are or winter festivals are in Iowa. We would love to hear from you. We have this tweet from Don Johnson. He said, what do runners do when it gets cold out? Go running. And he sent us a picture of himself all bundled up for a run outside. Now, Mindy, one of the things that I notice about people who love winter sports is it seems like once they really embrace winter sports like cross-country skiing, then they're constantly frustrated because the conditions need to be right and they just aren't always right.
Well, that's true. But there's a lot more than you can do than just cross-country skiing to have fun outside. You kind of hit upon one thing in talking about in coming to that point is that what we found is you can do what you enjoy all winter long, but you may have to make some adjustments for that. For instance, people that love to ride bikes, they like fall, they like summer, they like spring, but winter, they think they can't go out. Well, over a decade ago, some inventors who wanted to bike in the wintertime, too, came up with a fat bike. And the fat part refers to fat tires. And now it's really caught on. A lot of people that are really into biking can bike in the wintertime on the same trails that they do any other time of year. And but they're on these fat bikes. But accommodation. They're on that fat tire so that they've got more control in the snow. They want to get a wider contact and a bigger contact with the surface because they're less stable in snow. So they only put about 8 or 9 pounds pressure in those tires, and then they have almost a foot of tire contacting the surface they're riding on. But they can't go very fast.
Right.
You know, it's really slow. So you got to be aware of other people that may be doing the cross-country skiing, that may be going a little faster and so forth, that there's others on these trails that, you know, you need to watch out for.
Right. And this fat bike trend. I have noticed a lot of it in Iowa City over the last year or two. This started up in Alaska, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And then it kind of came down into Minnesota and Wisconsin and the areas where there's more snow more of the time. But, you know, there's a growing group of bike riders in Iowa that love their fat bikes. They typically have other bikes, too.
Right.
So this is just one more of their...
I know a lot of people with bike problems. Lots and lots of bikes in their garages. But you can actually get some of the same sensation on a mountain bike if you just lower the pressure in your tires, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's where a lot of people start with their mountain bike and do that. But if they get hooked on it, they're soon at the store looking for a fat bike.
Right. So I want to talk a little bit more about cross-country skiing before we move on. If you're looking to get into cross-country skiing, it can be hard to find the right place to do it. I mean, you can't just do it anywhere. If you're trying to go on a trail where a lot of people walk their dogs or hike all the time, then you're going to have a hard time finding a track that you can use, or it may be just a difficult terrain. Where do you look for great cross-country skiing?
Well, I would start with the state and county parks. A lot of them have groomed trails for cross-country skiing, and they're posted that that's just what it's for, so they don't have other people using that. But you need to call and find out what you know or what your local county or state park does in that line.
Right, right. And I have certainly been in places where there's some a little bit of a turf war between people who want to cross-country ski on the trail and people who want to use it for other reasons. But if it is a posted groomed trail, you know you're in luck if you're a cross-country skier. You also write about snowshoeing, and that's something I've never been able to fully have fun doing. So give me some advice. What makes it fun, and how do you find the right experience?
Well, if you don't know if you want to be snowshoeing, a good place to start is to go to, again, I'm pushing the parks, but those are the people that are getting around in the snow that work there, and they're good instructors. A number of parks either have snowshoes that you can borrow, or maybe they have a relationship with a provider in the nearby town, and you can get special pricing, you know, for maybe a class that's offered for learning how to snowshoe. The part I like best about it is that it is slow, and you can go over a lot of terrain, and it's an opportunity to be out in nature, and you can go with friends, but I like the solitude of it too. Nature is healing, and that's one thing that didn't come up in the other talk that I think is really important. I don't always understand how it is, and I'm not sure that people always understand what it is, but they say there's something about seeing how nature adapts and animals live and adapt to different weather conditions and so forth, that there's something in that that's so healing for people.
It goes beyond natural light.
Yes. And this gives it, when you're on snowshoes or if you're just in hiking boots, you get a chance to look at wildlife, especially with there's snow on the ground, especially around water areas where animals are going to get water. You can start following their tracks and kind of see what's happening.
You can see things that you can't see during the other seasons.
Right. You can in mud, you can. But
right.
In snow, you may see things like mouse tracks, and then all of a sudden these huge bird wings on the ground, and the tracks stop there. Well, that's an owl that's seen that mouse in the herded.
So you can read a whole story from the tracks sometimes.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I want to bring someone else into the conversation here, and this is one of the experiences that you wrote about, Mindy. Ginger Plummer is on the line. She is owner of Howling Hills Canine Campus near Cumming, and She is a dog sledder. Hello, Ginger.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
It sounds, from her description, I want to go out and play in the snow right now. Unfortunately, it's melting, and that's not good for us.
Right. Well, how did you, were you always someone who loved winter?
Oh, yeah. As a kid, I love it. I still do. No matter if the dogs are not, I still like the winter.
Well, I can hear some of your dogs behind you. How did you get into dog sledding?
Well, we bought our first Husky. And you can't stop at one. Then we bought two, and we met some people that had Huskies, and from around the state too, we found out who all had Huskies, and we all formed a club that was through the Iowa Club, not just Des Moines. And we had dog sled events. We'd go to different places, and we'd have races in the club. And then we joined also the Minnesota dog sledding clubs up there, and so we would go up there and we'd have races up there, and then they would put on kind of like major races within the clubs. And we've gone to Wisconsin for races too that was put on by the city. Can't even remember the name of the city, but they had a Winterfest and they had dog racing there too. Anyway, just one Husky led to more, and then we started having the puppies, and we finally got some teams going, and been in it ever since, and we just absolutely love it.
How many Huskies do you have right now?
We have 27, and then I also have about seven rescue Huskies that I have too. They're older and they can't do anything, but we take care of them anyway. But and some of mine are too old to run too. We can put together two teams of maybe six or seven.
Okay.
But we just don't have the right kind of snow right now to do that.
Well, that was that frustration I was talking about earlier with cross-country skiers. I'm sure you experience a lot of that frustration when the conditions aren't quite right. So when you start putting your Huskies on a dog sled team, what's the training process like?
Actually, it's fairly easy. You put your novice dog in the middle of a sled team. And you hook them up there, and when the team takes off, they either run or they don't, and they figure out that they have to run, and then they like it. They just love it. They just love to run. I know even in the beginning when we were hooking up the dogs and everything, and still to this day, and even at the Iditarod, the dogs are so anxious and wanting to run. The minute you bring out a harness, they just go nuts, and you can hardly contain them to get them into the line, and then bang, as soon as they start off, it's absolutely silent. There's no sound except the footprints on the snow, and it's then when you really enjoy it. It's really, really amazing.
How many dogs do you usually put on a team?
For me, myself, I used to run 12, but now I'm much older, and so I go from maybe 5.
Okay, and why is that more comfortable for you?
Because of the speed.
Okay. You just don't go quite as fast.
Right. And then if they were to get tangled, and sometimes they do that, if they get sidetracked see a squirrel run across the path or something, they'll get tangled up and you have to get off and, untangle the team and everything. And when you're by yourself, it's kind of hard to do, but, it's easy once you get used to doing it. So, yeah, the speed is mainly for me.
Now, you have Huskies. Do you have friends who run with other kinds of dogs, too?
Yes, we have Alaskan Huskies too. We started out with Siberian Huskies, but now that we have some Alaskan Huskies,
what's the difference?
The Siberian is mixed with some kind of other fast running dog, like a hound or something. And sometimes they'll come out looking like a Husky and with longer legs, and sometimes they come out looking more of the hound side.
Okay.
And that's what mostly the people in the Iditarod run are the Alaskan Huskies. So, I lost my train of thought.
I interrupted you. So we were talking about different kinds of dogs that can also do this.
Oh, yeah. Any dog that's a runner can pull. It doesn't have to be heavy or anything.
I have been on the other end of a lot of leashes, so I know they can pull.
Yeah. You just got to get the right kind of a harness, and you can go on one of the kids' sleds if you want, and have them pull you on that. depends on your weight and the weight of the dog, too. But that makes a lot of difference.
Is there any I know a lot of dogs have trouble with snow and ice with the pads of their feet. Are Huskies better suited to that, or do you just have to take good care of their feet?
Both.
Both, okay.
You do have to keep good care of them. And then if they're, you know, they're going to be on icy conditions, you know, you don't want any ice pieces to penetrate their pads or anything. So what you can do is buy dog booties and put them on their feet. And so that protects them.
Does that interfere with their ability to grip and really get going?
No, it doesn't. I don't know if anybody watched the Iditarod clips and stuff, but they mostly have booties on them. No, once they get used to it, they, you know, it's fine. They don't mind it. In fact, it's better for them. Short distances, if you're not going to be on, if you're on packed snow, that's fine. They don't need to, you know, wear booties then.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. Ginger, I hope you'll stay with us. Can you hang around for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Ginger Plummer is owner of Howling Hills Canine Campus near Cumming. Mindy Kralichek is also on the line. She's a writer for Iowa Outdoors. We're talking about ways to get out and embrace the winter. And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite ways to get out and enjoy winter in Iowa? What are your favorite winter destinations? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about ways to get out and embrace winter. You can join our conversation with some of your favorite ways to enjoy winter, your favorite winter destinations. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mindy Kralichek is here. She's a writer for Iowa Outdoors. Who wrote the recent article, Stoked on Snow, Get Out There. And one of the experiences she wrote about is sledding behind a team of dogs. And Ginger Plummer is here with us. She's the owner of Howling Hills Canine Campus near Cumming. And Ginger, when you get your dogs hooked up, you talked about how you like going out with a team of five these days. You used to sometimes drive 12. Where can you go to really have that experience? Because I can imagine those dogs could go a long way.
They can. Several years ago, before they started scraping the bike trails, that used to be our favorite place to go because it was a long stretch that we wouldn't have to worry about turning around right away and so forth. But now, for the bikers, well, that's good for them.
Right.
But not for us. We can't use the bike trails anymore because there's just not enough snow anymore. So we go wherever we can find a place. I have an acreage, and we have a trail here. It's kind of hilly. It's not as fun as the bike trail was, but we still have a lot of fun.
What makes it so much fun for you?
It's just the thrill, I guess, of seeing your dogs, the ones that you love, run out ahead of you. And it's just exciting. It's just, I don't know, once you've ever been behind a sled or driving a team or even riding in one, you would understand. It's just thrilling.
We've talked about what the dogs have to do to learn how to pull a sled. What do you have to do to learn how to drive a sled?
Well, you got to know the components of the sled, how it works, and you have to know how to hook up a team and how to untangle a team.
And that sounds like the most challenging part.
It is because unless they're tired and been running a while, then it's kind of hard to do, but it's manageable. And
can you do it alone, or do you need assistance?
I've done it alone in the past, but like I say, if you've got a snow hook and you push it into the snow, and that holds the team from running away from you, and once you get them untangled, you run back to the sled and pull that hook, and they're off again. So it works. You can do it. It's a little work, but it's still exciting. One other thing I was going to tell you that you can do with a different kind of a dog is what's called skijoring. It's people on cross-country skis. I can't even talk.
Skis, yep.
Skis. And the dog, they have a certain belt that they put around their waist, and the dog runs ahead of them, and they keep up with the dog. And that is a sport now. They have races for that, too, mostly up north. We don't do that here, but you can do that here if you, you know, if you can cross-country ski good.
Right. Yeah, I have a dog I know I couldn't keep up with.
Yeah, they say it's a lot of fun. But
I have a friend who's into that, so he swears by it. It seems a little scary to me. But part of what seems a little scary to me is that I know what happens when my dog sees a rabbit. If you have a team of Huskies connected to your sled and they see a rabbit, what happens?
It depends on how good your leader is. Teaching a leader, it's a little bit harder. I just had a couple. I don't have any more because old age, but they used to run without even being taught. We had one leader that would, if he'd come across their spot, he would go to the side and go around it and stay on the snow, and when he knew it was time to go back, he'd lead the team back on the trail. And so I never had a Jeehaw leader. We just had a natural leader.
Okay, so you didn't have to give commands?
I didn't. Well, you do, and they sometimes will listen to you, and sometimes they don't. But we never trained them for the Jeehaw.
Okay.
But
interesting. Well, there are so many great stories about amazing leader dogs.
Yeah.
Dog sleds. That's such a romantic idea. So, of course, Mindy wrote about you and wrote about what you do because it would be an exciting experience for a lot of people to get out. I know you probably have more people who want to try it than you can accommodate, but if somebody's really excited about it, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me here at Howling Hills. Howling Hills is actually a boarding and a grooming kennel, and the dog sledding is on the side, but they can call this number, 981-5120. That's 515-981-5120, and we can talk to him. But the snow, get back to the snow, it has to be just right. It has to be like a snowball, packable snow, and it has to be at least 2-3 inches. And if it's that fluffy white snow, the sled will go right through it, and you're back on gravel or whatever you're running on, and that's not good for the sled nor the dog's feet. So here in Iowa, it's kind of iffy, so we just kind of have to play it by ear.
All right. Well, for your sake, I hope we get some more good snow this winter.
Yeah. I was going to mention, too, that if anybody's listening that has a school class or whatever, we go to schools and we take a small team and the sled and we talk to them
about the
dog sledding. And we've done that for years.
Very cool.
If anybody's interested.
All right.
Saturday, we're going to the Boy Scouts. Their outing, their winter outing. And we do the same thing. We take a team and up there and talk to them. And then Okoboji has a winter festival in 2 weeks from Saturday. We're going to take a team and go up there. They were hoping for snow, so were we. But I don't know if Okoboji will have it or not. But
right. Well, good luck with that. Ginger, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Ginger Plummer, owner of Howling Hills Canine Campus near Cumming. Mindy Kralichek still with me, a writer for Iowa Outdoors. She wrote the recent article, Stoked on Snow. Get out there, and we'll get to the phones in just a moment, 866-780-9100. But Mindy, Ginger just brought up the Boy Scouts, and of course a lot of Boy Scout troops do winter camping, and that's something that can be a lot of fun, but you got to be ready for it, right?
You sure do. You need a four-season tent so that to shed snow and wind. Because, boy, the winds can come up unexpectedly. Mummy sleeping bags are probably the best to have. You can just cozy in down into those, especially those that are made for below zero weather, and just, you know, keep your nose out and the rest of you all tucked in there, and those are great. We also suggest that you would have a closed cell foam ground pad. This will keep you insulated from the ground cold and wetness that may be in the ground. And be sure you wear a wool hat to sleep in, and it'll be a quiet night under the stars, except you may hear a lot of noise about you, especially if you're out there by yourselves, which is going to happen a lot if you're doing primitive camping.
Right. Not a lot of people are going to get out there.
Yeah. So you can hear owl hoots of the different owls that live in Iowa, coyote calls, deer snorts. You know, they'll come up pretty close, and all of a sudden you hear that snorting noise that can really kind of shake you up a little bit.
Nice, nice. Well, and of course, you mentioned a quiet night under the stars. It is a tremendous time of year for stargazing.
Yes, it is. However, a lot of Iowa's observatories close for the winter, but it is the best time to see the stars because the cold nights mean clear skies. And one thing that my husband has and a lot of people have is they've downloaded free stargazing apps on their phones, and those will kind of get you interested a little more in discovering the different planets and constellations and
the information at your fingertips now.
You know, and most people are going to have a cell phone when they're out
right.
primitive camping. So there's a couple events that are coming up in February that would be good for anyone who has a telescope or and some things you can see a lot with binoculars. So be sure you have those with you if you're out camping or just going out to stargaze in your backyard. On February 6th, it's Jupiter at opposition. And Jupiter will be its closest approach to the Earth, and its face will be fully illuminated by the sun. And it's the best time to view and photograph Jupiter and its moons. Even with the binoculars, you can see Jupiter's four largest moons that look like bright dots on either side of the planet.
Oh, neat.
And then on February 22nd is the conjunction of Venus and Mars. This is a rare event. They will be extremely close together. In fact, just maybe a half a degree from each other in the sky, and look to the west just after sunset on February 22nd.
Let's go to the phones. Jim is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi. What do you like to do outside in the winter?
Well, I am 65 years old, and I like to hike in the area. I just have good clothing and good boots, and I can get out and hike every single day. Right now, I'm changing my clothes to go cross-country ski before the snow melts, but it always melts last down in those places, so even if the rest of town doesn't have any snow, there's still snow down in, like, Hartman Reserve or out in Black Hawk Park or in the state park.
Right. The shade does help, doesn't it?
It does. And it also, a reminder, too, people say it's so cold out, but there's no wind when you get down into the woods like that. So you really just have to deal with the air temperature. And it's just wonderful. I am as wild about winter as your guest.
Well, and Jim, I have some friends who seem to get frustrated during the summer months. Are you an equal opportunity outdoorsman, or is winter your time?
Oh, I bicycle, so I like to get out and bicycle in the summertime, but I think I just rise to the occasion in the winter when everyone else huddles indoors. I'm excited that there's snow, and we absolutely need more snow. We need 6-8 more inches right now. And it would be wonderful instead of this warm weather. So, no, I still like summer, but I just love the winter. It's exciting. It's fun to be out in. It's fresh. Everybody should get out there.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much for your call.
Sure. Thank you.
You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Roger is on the line in Jefferson. Hi, Roger.
Good morning.
Hi. And you just came in from a cross-country skiing
sure.
out.
Just came in. We've been out. We ski at a little park in Northeast Greene County called Spring Lake State Park, and we just came back in just now. We've been out for about an hour skiing.
Oh, nice. Were you trying to get out and enjoy it before the melting, too?
Right. It's even a little bit too warm right now. The snow is okay because it was in the shade on the trail we take, that we break our own trail. So it was in the shade. It's okay. But my thermometer on my truck said 30 degrees when came back in. So that's too warm for us to be out skiing, really.
Where are your favorite places to ski?
Well, the Spring Lake is really good. And everything in Greene County, we have somebody mentioned before about bike trails. We have a Raccoon Valley bike trail that goes from here, and it used to be okay, but now they've let snowmobiles on it, and so it's kind of wrecked that. And if the snow isn't really thick and good, it's not very good either. But we have a couple of little parks right here in Jefferson and in Greene County that we ski on quite a bit. And we've also been we've been to Yellowstone and skied a couple times, too.
Oh, nice. That sounds beautiful. Roger, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
We have this email from Ray. He says, if you listen to a lot of old Christmas songs, a good deal of them are actually songs about being outside with friends and not necessarily about Christmas. I think we have a lot more winter sporting opportunities now than maybe 50 years ago. But 50 years ago, I think there were a lot more people just going outside to walk around. What do you think about that, Mindy?
Well, I agree. And we've made it so that people can get out and walk around in malls and places that
right there are a lot more
are
indoor
not outdoors.
Spaces.
No,
right, a lot more indoor spaces. We're not quite as confined inside as we used to be. That may be part of the trend. Sarah is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
Hi. What are your favorite things to do outdoors in the winter?
Well, actually, we've always enjoyed the winter time for downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, skating, whatever. But it's one of my favorite times to go trout fishing.
Oh, why is that?
It just seems so peaceful out there by the stream, and you can see the wildlife more readily, and the fish are a little more fun to catch in the wintertime. They become a little bit more wild. So that's just one of my favorite. In fact, I'll be doing that this weekend.
All right. And what about ice fishing? Do you also do that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my kids are big ice fishermen, so I'll tag along once in a while and do that too. And it's fun to sit on. They have huts, but they really enjoy just sitting on a plastic bucket on the ice.
All right, Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing.
You bet. Thank you.
You know, I know in your article you wrote about ice boating. That seems to be something that's starting to catch on.
Well, it's a lot more popular just in the states north of us where they get more snow and
the ice
more cold,
more reliable,
more consistent
right.
cold.
They also have more lakes.
Yes. Oh, definitely. But, yeah, up in Clear Lake, there's a couple of ice boaters that will get their ice boats out there. It's got to be pretty exciting to see because they really can pick up a lot of speed. They can go 50, 60 miles an hour. These boats kind of ride on almost what looks like skates. But the metal against the ice kind of makes a water layer that they just glide on. But they need really smooth water to glide on. I know some ice boaters prefer to do that on rivers where there's a good length of river that's protected from wind and so forth so that the ice is really smooth.
And you can really travel a long way. Before we're out of time, I want to fit in one more call. Anthony's on the line in Fredericksburg. What do you like to do outside, Anthony?
One of my favorite things to do is frisbee golf in the winter. The extra wind adds a new level of challenge to it.
That sounds cold to me, but I think that's great. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
All right. Mindy Kralichek, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mindy Kralichek is a writer for Iowa Outdoors. She wrote the recent article, Stoked on Snow, for the magazine, and she has a whole list of different ways you can get out and enjoy the winter. A number of festivals coming up, especially in northern Iowa, as people try to get through these winter blues or embrace the season. Talk of Iowa is produced by Clara Roth, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.